Lisa and Tim have never used jackhammers, chainsaws or grinders. But if you have, get a hearing check at westernhearing.com.au.
Hey, it's Lisa and Tim here. You hear us weekday abos from 4 for your drive home on the radio, on the FM wireless.
Yes, but the internet has allowed not only for cat videos, but for podcasts of us. All the best bits jam-packed up nicely and packaged and in a cast.
I hope it's as entertaining as those cat videos. Here's some of the best bits now.
Closed Circuit is the brilliant new conspiracy thriller which opens next week and stars the brilliantly versatile Eric Bana. Thank you for joining us, Eric.
Oh, guys, thanks for having me.
So, now, you not only star in this film, but you actually were quite instrumental in getting it its conception at all with your production company, Pickup Trucks.
Yeah, I got in early, and it was one of those scripts that just, you know, it just really sucked you in. And when you read a good one, it's becomes pretty obvious really quickly, and I loved it and jumped on board, and then got the opportunity to distribute the film here in Australia, and I thought that, you know, people who are into a good conspiracy thriller would like it.
So, yeah.
I've got to say, I'm a huge fan of, you know, the conspiracy thriller, and this has got a bit of, you know, political thriller, a bit of courtroom drama, a little bit of terrorism action going on. And it's one of those thrillers where you don't know who to trust and you don't know who the real villain is going to turn out to be. Is this one of your favourite kinds of genres as well?
It is, and they're shrinking. You know, it's really hard to find these kind of films, not only as an actor, well, especially as an actor, but even as an audience member. And, you know, as Hollywood churns out a lot of big budget, sort of huge concept stuff, this sort of smart, wordy, you know, tense thriller, they're getting harder and harder to get made. And so when they come up, you know, we all jump on them.
Are they harder to find a really good story because life itself is just getting more insane?
True. So how do you...
You've got to find one that's believable without being too mundane.
Yeah, it's very true. Line. Actually, it's... someone said to me, you know, is it harder to find things that are a stretch for the imagination because, you know, every day news story breaks. And in this case, it felt a little far-fetched. And then when we were filming, the phone hacking scandal broke. Then as soon as we finished, the Ed Snowden stuff came up. And so it's like it ends up being not that far from reality. Yep. So whilst we do take a couple of liberties in the film without giving too much away with MI5 and the British government being involved, but it's all somewhat feasible.
Now, I must commend you on your British accent in the movie, and obviously you've had to do now a lot of movies with an American accent.
I'm actually American. This is an accent now. My Australian accent is my strongest. Effortless, isn't it?
Hey? Doesn't sound even remotely English.
Funny thing is, you know, at the end of every film, they edit the film, and then there's always, for reasons of, you know, trucks in the background and so forth, you always have to go back and redo some lines for audio. And obviously with technology now, you can do it from the other side of the world. Mm. But there's usually always one full day's work. It's about 12 hours long that you have to do on the film. And I always ask, can I fly over to do it? Because it's the middle of the football season. And it's really hard for me to sound British or American or German or something. So,
but yeah, I've got one ear on the score.
Exactly. If it's a big day, I like to go over and do it. But if it's just the occasional line here and there. And they laugh, you know, because it'll take me about half an hour to warm up. And
Even the remotest, oh, umpire, I'll know what you were doing that day. Now, I read that you had to learn to row for this movie. And I thought, how does that rate on a scale of things you've had to learn from? I mean, time travel's got to be hard to beat, but things you've had to learn for a movie.
I know this sounds ridiculous. Seriously, out of all the physical things I've had to learn for a film, and they're always fun because, you know, it's
always
great.
Fun to challenge yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. The hardest. Single scull rowing in a proper race boat, without doubt, to get to a level of competency where it looks like you actually know what you're doing was easily the hardest thing I've had to learn. And that's compared to, like, bareback horse riding or anything. That was the hardest, but at the same time, very satisfying.
Yeah, right, because you ended up, you're rowing along the Thames there. Did you actually enjoy that once you got the hang of it?
I was quite fearful for my life, is what I was. And every time it got relatively calm and I'd yell out, let's go, let's start filming, let's do a take. And then some big barge would come down and the waves would start. And you're not allowed to be on there after a certain hour and you know, there's
a reason for it.
Don't let amateurs out on the Thames.
Well, I saw you on Conan a little bit earlier on this year, Eric, having to explain the meanings of some Australian words to him.
That's right.
Ranger was one of them. Rooting, dare I say it, was another one. Yeah. Are you finding that now there's so many Aussies in LA and so successful in the industry over there, it's getting a little bit
easier? No, they still haven't got a clue what we're saying. No, hasn't helped. Hasn't helped at all.
Do you find yourself feeling reasonably at home though, or is there a little collection of guys that you catch up with sometimes when you're over
no,
there?
No, I live in Melbourne, so I don't really get to spend much time over there. I mean, yep. I've got a few friends over there, but no Australians actually,
okay.
Except for Anthony LaPaglia, who's a good buddy, mm-hmm. and Hugh Jackman, but he lives over in New York, so. Yeah, most of the guys that I do know over there are, you know, other actors that I've worked yeah. with over the years and become good mates. But I'd rather hang out with Aussies in Australia.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? You've made some big movies here and some big movies in, well, Hollywood. How does those experiences compare in terms of the crews? Are they quite different or...?
No, it's a funny thing. Crews are the same in every country.
Really?
The only thing that differs is how much overtime you do.
Yeah.
So the good thing about doing films in England or Australia is... we're similar in the sense that we want to finish at about 5 or 6,
yeah.
ideally.
Yeah.
Especially if there's a game on. You know?
Or daylight saving or something.
Whereas in America, they'll just keep going. They'll just keep yeah. going and they'll rack up the overtime. So there's yeah. a little bit of a difference there. Mm-hmm. But in terms of personality types, it's a really funny thing. You know, every country you go to,
it's a type.
The grips wear the same. You know, they wear the shorts, whether it's 5 degrees or 45 degrees. And yeah, it's quite interesting.
That's funny.
Is there any kind of obligation, do you think, Eric, for people like yourself who've been really successful overseas, Aussies who've been really successful overseas, to put something back into the Aussie industry? I mean, you're probably always going to do it because it seems like a natural thing for you, but do you feel obliged?
Look, it's a really good question. I haven't done a lot of films here in the last 10 years. And to be honest, I feel like in some ways that's probably a good thing. And, yep. you know, sometimes scripts will come my way and people will really want you to be in them. And by signing on, you sort of help get things moving. But at the same time, I'd rather someone else have a go, you know. So
yeah, right.
So I think the best thing for all of us is to keep going overseas and keep taking work off other people, because we're not as generous, and let the next person come through and get that gig. So whilst, you know, I have a production company here and, you know, I get involved in a bit of stuff here and there, I don't see it as my sort of duty to do a film here every couple of years. I'd rather mm-hmm. someone else do it.
Yeah, cool.
But what you described is like a self-forestation of, you know, trees. It just keeps it growing. Yeah. It's a strange analogy.
If they're silly enough to keep yeah. giving us jobs and paying us, we should just keep going on over there and stealing them as long as we can and not giving them any, you know. So.
Any other films in the pipeline or a well-earned rest?
I'm not sure yet. I mean, I've got a couple of films in the can. There's one called Lone Survivor, which is the Marcus Luttrell story about a Navy SEAL mission in Afghanistan, which is an incredible film mm-hmm. directed by Pete Berg, which comes out in February.
Ah, love him.
Yes. And then I have quite a scary one, which comes out in August. Actually, July in the States. I'm not sure about here, called Beware the Night.
Right.
Directed by Scott Derrickson, who made The Exorcism of Emily Rose and Sinister.
Oh, okay.
Which was a lot of fun. I just shot that a few months ago in the Bronx, actually, playing a detective, and it's quite out there.
My guess has always been that to scare people would be the hardest thing, you know, without it being silly, but to really scare the bejesus out of them would be the toughest thing for an actor to do.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And it was thrilling for me because, you know, Scott has this amazing respect and understanding of the genre.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a slasher film. It's like a true
character-driven
horror film that just really makes it hard to go to sleep.
Yeah.
And I hadn't done anything like that before. And I read this one. I went, like, one of the best characters I've read for years and jumped on board. So
great. So. That'll be good.
Now, you got the screening of the new movie tonight, Eric, Closed Circuit at Lunar Cinemas in Leederville. And a Q&A session afterwards. You've done a couple already over East, have you? A couple of Q&As?
Yes, we have, yeah.
Has anyone asked you anything that was a bit of a tough question?
No, it's great, actually, because, you know, there's always a bit of a distance between yourself and the audience when it comes to movies. And yeah. so the Q&A screening is really interesting because you're there facing the audience, you know, 2 or 3 minutes after the credits roll. Mm. And it's as close as you get to... We don't do live theatre, you know, so it's as close as you get. And I always build into the itinerary a 5-minute bathroom break, yeah. so that anyone who hates the movie can get the hell out of there. Doesn't have to awkwardly sit through it.
Yeah.
So no, they're a lot of fun. I actually get some fantastic questions. We had one in Canberra. We've done some in Melbourne and Sydney, and it's been really interesting. So I'm just really glad I could get over here and do one as well.
Excellent.
Yeah,
there you go.
Pretty discerning audiences. It's always reassuring.
Yeah. I urge anyone who does love a good taut thriller to go and check out Closed Circuit. You can't go to tonight's screening. It's been sold out for a while, I believe. But if you are going, enjoy it. And everyone else, just go and see the movie sometime because it's awesome. Thanks for coming
Fantastic.
In.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
really Sarah. Appreciate it.
The Barmy Army is a semi-organised, quite well-organised really, group
yeah, are,
of English
yeah.
cricket fans which arranges touring parties for some of its members to follow the English cricket team on overseas tours. And someone who spent time here at this very station as our senior producer because he fell in love with Australia on a tour of duty with the Barmy Army is Jeff Jean, and we've tracked him down back in the UK. Hello, Jeff.
Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
I'm very well. It's early in the morning for Jeff, and we should point out he did have his office Christmas party last night.
Yep. I've just gone through for you.
Oh, you're wonderful. So the Barmy Army, any idea of a... Because you were quite a part of it for a while there. As I said, you fell in love with Australia, travelling with the Barmy Army. Any idea of a number regarding how many people make up the army these days?
It's weird. I mean, it sort of encompasses anybody who's ever gone on one of these tours. So
right.
Obviously the number goes up every time they tour. But you could have any test match, anywhere up to 1,000 sort of official travelling fans
yeah.
of England all together in the same pub.
And then anyone else who's English and in Australia at the time would consider themselves Barmy Army.
Absolutely. I mean, the first few times I kind of came across the Army was just as an English cricket fan at an away game.
Yeah.
And you kind of sit near them, you learn the songs, gradually you become... You know, you get to know the characters, you know, sort of famously Billy the Trumpeter is kind of one of the most famous and I guess most vocal and easy to hear of the army.
Right.
And you get to know the guys and you go for a drink with them after the game. And there's always an official kind of army HQ. So, which I would suggest you avoid if you're
yeah.
an Australian.
I was going to say, I know that in Sydney this time around, it's a pub called PJ Gallagher's. And I think here in Perth, it was always a place called the Lucky Shag. Where's that again?
Down at by the bell tower on the Swan.
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
We'll find yes. that.
It's the one there next to the ferry. Yeah.
Here's what I love
Absolutely.
about the Barmy Army. I mean, I can't stand sport hooliganism, and you do see a lot of it, but the Barmy Army is not that at all. And if anything, I think they've injected a lot of fun back into the game.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, it was the Australian media, well, it shouldn't surprise me, that actually more or less gave them the name during the 94-95 Test Series.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and there's a reasonable amount of self-deprecation to most of the songs. You know,
of
the famous
course.
We Are the Army, the Barmy Barmy Army is possibly the worst song that's been sung on a terrace anywhere in the world. But but it's kind of endearing, and importantly,
Absolutely.
It's easy to remember when you've had a few.
I had a little bit of a look through the Barmy Army songbooks before, Jeff,
yep.
and it seems like every second song taking the mickey out of the Australians mentions the word convicts. when are you going to get over the whole convicts angle, mate?
Never. I'm working at a radio station in London at the moment, and one of our phone-ins the other day was bands that sound Aussie but aren't. They're kind of... Melbourne B, that kind of thing. And the number one suggestion was the Fun-Loving Criminals.
Oh, really?
Once a convict, always a convict, I suppose.
Well, I'm not going to ask you to do any chants based on the state of you today.
I can barely speak, Lisa. Don't ask me to sing.
Thanks for joining us, though, Jeff. It has been fun, as always. And we welcome all members of the Barmy Army.
It's a pleasure. Look forward to arriving in Perth. It's always a home from home for the Army.
Excellent.
And we look forward to making it 2-0 up, mate. So.
We'll hear. No doubt. We'll hear from you on Twitter.
We are the Army.
Some call him the silver screen savant, the all-seer of celluloid. Will he give it the thumbs up or will he give it the finger?
Ha, fancy.
It's Justin Hamilton.
All right, and we're talking movies that have got the finger.
Yes.
Because we're going through the best tomorrow, and today we're going to go through the worst movies of the year.
Yes,
for
we
you.
Are.
Okay.
Oh, here we,
Off
go,
we go,
right?
Yeah.
Look, this is going to make you laugh. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra came in at number 5. And this is how bad this movie was. I can't remember seeing it. Like, this is true. I was going through my list, and when I saw the title of the review, I figured I must have misspelled the title of another movie. And then I started reading the review, and I was like, oh, and then bits and pieces started coming back, and then I was angry at myself because my brain had obviously done its best to yeah. make me forget, and yeah. there I was reminding myself. And then I was like, oh no, it had Bruce Willis and Dwayne Johnson in it, and it was still terrible.
Oh, yeah.
And anyway, it got to a point where I just had to turn off my computer before I did remember the entire experience. Thanks for keeping me in the dark, brain. I owe you one. I gave that one 5 plastic mounds of yuck. Coming in at number 4, Gangster Squad. Now, one of my favourite movies of all time is The Untouchables. So this made this film an even bigger affront to my sensibilities, as they pretty much attempted to cross the adventures of Elliot Ness with the direction of Dick Tracy. The tone was all over the place, and even Ryan Gosling being dapper wasn't enough for me to hope that this movie just kind of gave up halfway through it, and I was like, I don't even understand where this is going. And like, the good thing about this movie is that when anyone told me they liked it, I could calmly count them out of someone that I'd ever talk about movies with again. So I gave that 5 yuckies. Number 3. Oh, Diana. Like, oh, Lord. I always believed that Naomi Watts could do no wrong, but it turns out everyone has a stinker in them, and unfortunately it was this terrible biopic on the flawed princess.
Yeah. Everyone has an Addis Horribilis.
Oh, look, you know, you got to own it, right?
Yeah.
And look, if this movie had starred lesser actors and had been a movie of the day, you still would have turned it off after the first ad break. to say this movie was a car wreck of a film would show a lack of class. So instead, I think we should all just walk away from this movie and never speak of it again.
Okay. Right.
I gave it 5 yelps. Coming in at number 2, The Counselor. Like, what was going on with this
controversial
film?
This was, wasn't it?
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know some people who loved it. And when they tell me, it's like they're speaking another language. it's like reading the font Wingdings. It makes no sense to me.
Nell.
Yes, exactly. from the moment Cameron Diaz made love to a car, I knew I'd entered a bizarre world. And I was waiting for someone to leap out in the cinema and go, ah, you're punked. And I would have said, oh, that seems out of date, but fair enough. Like Ridley Scott and Cormac McCarthy teamed up to make the type of movie you would have said was a bad attempt to make a Ridley Scott and Cormac McCarthy movie. And, you know, like Michael Fassbender, he lacked charisma. And a lot of the other actors were terrible. How Brad Pitt managed to still be good in this is a miracle. And considering he also turned World War Z into a massive hit, like, that's 2 miracles. So I think Pitt must be up for sainthood. Like, that's amazing. But the rest of that
or
film, I
Jesus.
Gave it. Yeah, he could be. I will accept that. He's got the long hair.
Yes.
Look, I gave this movie 5 yowzers. And coming in at number 1. Oh, Lord.
Here we go.
After Earth.
After Earth. Oh, the Will Smith movie.
Oh, and the Little Smith movie.
Mini Smith.
Oh. Yeah.
if you had told me a decade ago that Will Smith would team up with M. Night Shyamalan to make a movie together, I would have said, oh, my God, that's going to be a behemoth. And it turned out I was right. It was a behemoth of regret. It was a stinker. Like, whoever told Will Smith the rest of the world was keen for his son to take over his mantle must have also been drinking the fresh Prince of Bel-Air Kool-Aid, you know? And after watching this, it won't be long before Will Smith's charisma and M. Night's talent turn up on milk cartons because he's seriously gone missing. The only good thing about this movie is that it broke the laws of physics as time literally stopped in the cinema. I gave that 5 yikes.
5 yikes. Brilliant.
Thank you so much, Justin. And now,
we've kept the best for last.
And we'll go in on a positive note for the year. And tomorrow we'll get Justin's 5 favourite movies of 2013. Thanks, Just.
Thank you.
Levan Legal's annual Christmas Combi is a fundraising drive to benefit the Salvation Army and bring holiday cheer to WA families in need. And to tell us all about the Christmas Combi, Warren Palmer from the Salvos is with us. Hi, Warren.
Hi, Lisa. Hi, Tim. Good to be with you.
Combi always conjures up love to me, a combi of love.
It does.
And, you know, we love what you do with the Salvos all year round, but it's this time of year that the Salvos really shine in particular.
Well, it's a really high need area for us, and for many people in our community, it's really been a tough year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. People are struggling with utilities, all of those sorts of bills, paying the rent, mm-hmm. keeping the roof over their heads is one of the major impacts and struggles for people. And so the Salvation Army just wants to bring, I guess, a sense of hope and light and joy to people's lives.
Because it's not a festive time for everybody. It can amplify what one's going through.
Look, it can. I mean, many people, I guess, there is no light at the end of the tunnel. They don't see. The normal drudgery of life is struggle and hardship. And a survey we released earlier in the year said that almost 40% of people that would come and see us for help are struggling just to feed themselves during the day and would go without a meal. So how can they support themselves with a special meal at Christmas Day?
And they shouldn't, but parents must when they can't provide toys and so on. They must feel an awful guilt. And you would be taking that away and just giving them a break.
Certainly, there's no doubt. Each of us as parents, and I'm a parent of two girls, that you know, we all want to give the best for our children. And at Christmas time, sometimes there is those great expectations that come with it. But you know, it's great to see the smiles on Christmas morning and opening your presents.
Yeah.
One of the things I love about the fact that you have setups in shopping centres around Perth is that I actually see people, and I know people who do this. They go into the supermarket or wherever to buy their Christmas stuff, and they go, "I'm going to get an extra one of that to put in the combi." And it's fantastic to see people doing that.
Look, we have a number of campaigns like this, and the Levin Legal combi van, which is a great campaign, which was only started last year, is a great opportunity to do that. We have the Kmart Wishing Tree as well, which is another great opportunity to contribute in that way.
And I think people like to contribute something tangible rather than just money. I mean, of course, money is always welcome, but what kind of goods are you after? And then we'll run through where the van's going to be, the combi's going to be.
Look, I guess we're looking for specialty items for a nice Christmas lunch, and, you know, we're looking for tins of ham, chocolate, fruit, puddings, soft drink. Things that can create a special occasion, which is outside of the normality of a normal, you know, lunch. And it just brings that family together, and eating something special always adds to that.
Yeah. The combi is spending a few days at Garden City, at Farmer Jack's in Subiaco, at the Park Centre in Victoria Park, and then Claremont Quarter, and that's going to run over 2 weeks. So we will keep people posted on our Facebook page of where the combi is. And is there a website that people can go to get more info on that?
SalvationArmy.org.au/WA.
Okay, well, that will tell people where the van is each day.
Yes, and you are happy to take our money as well if people don't have time to get the groceries
we
and stuff.
We do accept cash, yes.
Yeah. And we were talking before, on Christmas Day itself, you have need for volunteers to help out at different events?
Yeah, look, Christmas Day and the period leading up to Christmas, we have needs for volunteers that can come alongside of the Salvation Army. We not only have our soup run, which feeds the homeless on the Christmas morning, we also have a number of other services that provide accommodation needs and facilities that require assistance as well. So I would encourage anybody that has some time to spare, give us a call and we'll have a look and see what is available and see if we can link you up with a particular service.
Warren, thanks so much for coming in, and keep up the fantastic work you guys do.
Thank you. It's a real pleasure. And, you know, without the community support, we couldn't do half of what we do.
And you have a safe and Merry Christmas yourself and everyone at the Salvos.
Thanks, guys. You too.
If you thought this podcast of Lisa and Tim sounded more like a low-pitch humming sound, like a bzzz or yee, get a hearing check at westernhearing.com.au.